Breakfast puppies?
This podcast contains adult language and content and is meant for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
We're all set to begin, so let's dive right in to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things and all the like. You can listen to it in your cars. But mostly it's about dive bars. Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
Hey, Jacob.
What are you drinking right now?
I am drinking a Pelican Stout Tsunami Export Stout Tall Boy.
Ooh.
So good. So good. Pelican Brewing creates some of the best stuff. Yeah, and it is tasty and just the slightest bit chocolatey without being a chocolate stunt stout. So I really enjoy these. Hey, Poppy, what are you drinking?
Currently, I'm drinking a standard pour 1.5 ounce of Green Spot whiskey on a nice big ice cube. So it's nice and I like my whiskey ice cold, it turns out.
I do too.
Yeah, I like my whiskey ice cold. I don't particularly need this much water in it as this ice cube melts, but I do like it to be iced ice cold. I'm going to follow that up with a Winmar Brothers Hefe.
Yeah, I am drinking the same thing here. We got our Green Spot going on with this Winmar Brothers Hefeweizen, the original American Hefeweizen. Something, something, something. Portland, Oregon, something, something, something. It doesn't have any dates or anything else here. I thought it would have like a, you know, some kind of a weird advertising spiel like every other beer does, but I guess not. I mean, it's a Woodmer Hef.
Yeah.
You look at it, you know what it is, you know what it tastes like.
What else do you want?
It's on draft at every single bar in the damn city.
I don't know off the top of my head how long Woodmer's been around, but it from when I moved into Portland, it seemed like everyone was talking about it like it dated back to pre-World War II or something. So I have no idea.
Actually, when Lewis and Clark showed up, the brewery was already here.
I kind of think that the Widmer brothers are actually like the assistants to Lewis and Clark. They sort of came along with, they had like one of the wagons was the original Widmer brewery. They just towed that fucker across the country.
They had a portable brewery that they dragged up the Missouri River. Yeah.
And when Lewis and Clark turned around, they're like, nah, we good.
They're like, cool, we'll stay here and drink. Looks like a nice spot for it. And
I think they basically decided to stop where the brewery broke down. So the brewery broke down. They're like, well, this is home now.
This is where we shall build our brewery.
Yeah. Widmer, I think, is still considered by many to be a craft beer. But I think by this point, they have like national coverage. Did InBev buy them or not?
I have no idea.
I don't know. So weird thing is growing up in Minnesota, we could get Widmer's non-alcoholic products, which you normally can't get inside of Oregon, apparently.
I didn't even know they existed.
They make a really shitty cream soda. That's all I remember. It was like just insane. And it's garbage. Absolutely garbage. If you're a cream soda lover, skip it. But yeah. Pelican Brewing since 1996, because they label their cans.
Very nice.
Born on the beach. They have a couple locations, including Tillamook and a nice one south on the coast, just north of Nestucca. I can't remember what little town it's in, but very good tasting rooms. Very well worth the while to go.
One in Cannon Beach, right?
Yeah,
right on that corner.
Yeah, depending upon which of the exits off of 101 that you take to get into Cannon Beach, I think if you take the second or third one, it pops you out right there next to Pelican.
I think it's Midtown, the Midtown exit.
Yeah.
I go to Cannon Beach a lot, so.
They also have a brewery and tasting room in Astoria, which of all the locations is my favorite to go into.
Just why is that?
The vibe. It's on the Astoria old waterfront, and it's in that weird semi-industrial commercial district down there, and it's nice.
Is that the one with the see-through floor? So you could see the seals?
No, okay. I know the one you're thinking of.
Okay.
That sounds magical.
Yes. It's pretty cool.
A brewery with a see-through floor?
Or it was a brew pub or restaurant or something, but it wasn't Pelican.
Yeah, it wasn't
okay.
Pelican.
Okay. Well, we'll go sometime.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you can. I just like laid on the floor with all the kids and like looked at the seals. So I was like, I have no shame. It's great fun.
You should not have shame.
No, speaking never. Of things with no shame, you're listening to Bikers, Dice, and Bars, recorded here in Portland, Oregon. I'm NPC.
I'm still drinking, just Jacob.
And I am Poppy Beaujolais.
And this is our first recorded episode of 2021. Yes. This would be episode number 52, I believe. We are recording this the day, the very first dawn of the new year that did not open with Donald Trump being in the White House.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, technically it did, but it's after the 20th, so we're good.
Yeah, this morning dawned on a Trump-free White House.
It was a dawn-free dawn.
Yes.
Sadly, the good doctor cannot join us today. He is still off in California visiting family, taking a much-needed respite from Portland and responsibilities and hanging out with his family. So we'll see him again soon when he comes back. He should be here for our next episode.
I sure hope so. Xander has joined me in my weekend games. We play Rifts, the old school Rifts, every Sunday, and Xander is playing some very interesting characters. I actually should have prefaced this by saying what I've been up to in the last few weeks. But yeah, and it's been a blast. What about y'all?
What have we been up to for the last couple of weeks? Is that the question?
Yeah.
Jacob, what have you been up to?
Oh, let's see. Dealing with the ramifications of the COVID vaccine amongst many of my friends and families. For a lot of people, the COVID vaccine's a rough ride afterwards. And beyond that, I've been running my Red Markets game, which is picking up steam, and that's going great. I did a little bit of springtime maintenance on the bike, and that was nice. I realized that I need to get that back in the shop in order to do a wheel change. I'm a big proponent of changing your own tires on motorcycles, but I happen to have a belt drive with a really weird triple tree up front, so I trust the folks over at CycleTune to take care of that work for me and just do it right. So, yep.
I would be really freaked out if I wasn't like 100% sure I was truing those wheels, like just spot on. That would really freak me out. So, yeah. So good to get in with the professionals there.
Generally speaking, scooters are pretty easy to true up.
So. I mean, you've seen my scooter, though.
Yes.
She's weird.
Yes. Much like its rider.
Pretty, but real clunky and weird on the inside.
Aren't we all, sister?
Aren't we all? Yeah.
How about you?
Well, let's see. I have played so much Gardenscapes on my phone that I now have a repetitive stress injury. Or at least what I'm calling repetitive stress injury.
So wait. You're going to be like the South Park World of Warcraft guy with like a brace, but specifically for a phone game?
Because it's this tendon right here in my thumb, right here from holding my phone, you know, while I'm playing. Because I swipe with my right hand and I hold the phone with my left. And so I've started getting this pain in my tendon. I can feel the tendon snap back and forth when I rub it. And so now I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. So now whenever I play Gardenscapes, I'm trying to like use my appendages differently so it has time to heal. And I also think I'm starting to get a little bit of arthritis too, which is really shitty because I'm like not quite 40. So I'm just like trying to be extra careful with my hands. But speaking of hands, no. I also started playing Among Us, which is very, very suddenly very popular PC game. Well, it's multi-platform, actually.
Yep.
I've learned. I was kind of kept seeing people post about it. And I'm like, okay, what the hell is this? And it was on sale on Steam for like $5 or something. So I was like, okay, I'll check it out. And I did the little playthroughs, you know, and then finally jumped into some public rooms, which is like my first time doing that. I've never played with strangers on the internet before.
I think I was sitting in the same room with you when you did that the first time.
Yeah, and I was the imposter three times in a row. And I was brand new to this. And I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
And it was like, they started the game, 2 minutes in, they knew you were the imposter.
Because I'd kill somebody and then not know what to do. And then they'd be like, it was green. I'm like, yeah, I'm not very good at this. And, but it was cute because one of the players was like, This character is a 5-year-old sister, so, you know, take it easy on her. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, I've played that game a couple times in the last month when it went on sale, because the other big thing that happened was the end of the year Steam sales, Epic Store sales. And
I got so many hentai games. I mean, I got so many open world survival games from that.
Oh, you shouldn't tell my parents that. Yeah. My folks got him like a really large Steam gift card for Christmas, because I was like, he'll be happier than a pig and shit if you give him that.
Yep.
Hentai games. Thanks, Mom and Dad Beaujolais.
But I rapidly found out that I cannot play Among Us with friends because, or at least the circle of friends that I had been, I started out playing with, because all of them would be like at the first meeting going like, well, we should kill Jacob's character just to be sure. Wow. Like, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But other than trying to play Among Us a little bit, I've kind of fallen out of the habit of playing Darkest Dungeon. It kind of comes and goes like most things I enjoy. That, you know, goes with the flow or whatever. I've been trying to manage the existential dread that is our lives of the last couple of years by filling my downtime with crafting. I've been sort of forcing myself back into like beading and making dice roses and sewing and painting and just trying to keep myself busy, not just sitting in front of the TV. I mean, I did binge all of Letterkenny and all of Bridgerton. And I feel like there was something else in there, too. And I just blocked it out, apparently. But, yeah, you know, just keep myself busy. Working the day job full time and just trying not to go crazy.
How about you, NPC?
Gaming. Also in podcasting. Started a new podcast under the Breakfast Puppies label.
Oh.
This one is a Palladium role-playing game fan podcast.
Yes.
Featuring myself and Matthew Gray, who has been on this show, I think once or twice, but was one of my regular co-hosts on our previous podcast, Half Movies, One Game. And this podcast is called The Glitter Boys. That's B-O-I-S. And our logo looks like Lisa Frank barfed out some words on the back of a trapper keeper. It's beautiful.
It's really it is
beautiful.
The yep. best logo. I want a t-shirt so hard, just in the foil yeah. printed, you know, glittery. Yeah, I want that.
Yeah, I've been enjoying listening to that. Even if you're not a Riffs fan, listening to these two geek out about it has been very enjoyable. As a Riffs player from way back in the 90s, it's been a joy to listen to.
Thanks.
When you get around to finding space to do recon, I would appreciate an invite because, oh my God, talk about the ugly stepchild of the Palladium system.
We can make that happen. I know very little about recon. I've had it pitched to me as Dungeon Crawl Classics in Vietnam.
That's accurate.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll take a look at it when that time comes. It's definitely one I want on my list, because you're not the only person I know in this city who is strangely affectionate about that game.
Hmm. It did some very weird things at the time. So, yeah, that's what he said. I also heard you celebrated a birthday.
I am 41 now. Oh.
Yep.
Yep.
How exciting.
It's so handsome.
Yep. Oh. That's about all I got to say about that. So let's move on to our topic.
Yes.
We gathered here today to talk about
we're talking battle jackets, biker vests, and cuts. And the importance of the three, what is different between the three, and how about getting your own? So that's it. My two co-hosts are sitting here in their battle jackets, and they both look great. So, Poppy, what you sewing nowadays?
Well, so I was very excited about this topic because it's something I don't actually know very much about. If someone were to ask me like, oh, what's the story behind these jackets? I'd be like, I don't know. They're cool. It's a thing. I don't know. So I have this denim jacket that my darling NPC got for me that I believe you cut the arms off of. He's taking a picture of me right now. So, you know, yeah.
Xander's not here to be our photographer, so it falls upon me, the second best, I think, in the group.
Yeah. So he got me. So my favorite baseball team is, of course, the St. Louis Cardinals, if you don't already know that about me. So he got me this wonderful denim jacket with a big St. Louis Cardinal patch on the back and a little St. Louis Cardinal patch on the front, and cut the arms off of this denim jacket and was like, hey, here's your battle jacket. Like, great. Now I will be one of the cool kids, or, you know, I don't know. Now I have someplace for all of my patches, you know, but I don't actually know why it's called a battle jacket. And I don't know how it's different from other kinds of similar garments. So I am. Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe we'll get some pictures of our vests and post them online. And but yeah, mine's just like this weird hodgepodge of like pins and buttons and cute things and metal looking things and inside jokes. And yeah.
NPC, you're also wearing your battle jacket.
I had wanted to have a battle jacket that was this cool since I was a teenager and in the punk rock / metal scene, which was laughable in my hometown in Lower Alabama. So all the cool kids had them, and I just wasn't super cool then. So I didn't even know where to get them or how to make them. I didn't know how to sew. But over 30 years, I guess, I had been collecting patches to one day put on a vest or a jacket or a bag or something. And then I got an itch a few years back, and it's like, it's fucking time. I need to learn how to do this. I am not quite at midlife crisis point, so I want to do it before I get there. So
you got some time, young man. You got some time. Yeah. I'll let you know when I hit mine, and then you have a benchmark on when you need to start worrying.
Deal. And I taught myself how to sew just to put together. Poppy taught me how to sew.
Thank you.
Just so I could do this. And then I picked it up like pretty quickly.
Really good at sewing.
I got really, really deep into it. And the very first patch that I sewed on was a Moto Bushido patch for my role-playing game. But the second patch that I sewed was my full-size back piece of the Tunnel Snakes, because the Tunnel Snakes rule. That's a Fallout 3 reference.
It's a beautiful patch.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, no, both of them seem to be coming along great. Yeah. So NPC, you talked about where you first encountered it. All the cool kids had it in your small Alabama town.
Yeah. And the we had where I grew up, the subcultures were small. We didn't have, I mean, it was a city, but it was a small Alabama city. And most people were not of metal or nerdy or punk rock style subculture. So the punks, the metalheads, the goths, they all sort of hung in the same group. Yeah. So it was really hard to tell them apart. Whereas you look at, you know, a lot of larger cities that have more diverse and established teenage subcultures at the time, we didn't have that. So it was all just a hodgepodge of the people who weren't cool.
Yeah.
We were just the freaks, the geeks and freaks.
Yeah.
Perfect. Geeks and freaks. There we go.
My first encounter with battle jackets was through the heavy metal scene back in Minnesota. Because the punks in my area were still really holding to the old school England aesthetic. Mm. It didn't matter whether you were sharp or skinhead or whatever, but you were still holding true to the old 1960s, 70s suspenders. And I cannot remember for the life of me the name of the style of jacket that was popular, but it was
bomber.
It wasn't a bomber jacket, although if you couldn't afford it, it was that.
Are you thinking like the Adam Ant sort of Revolutionary War?
No, well, no, it was jacket. It originally came out of the two-tone movement in the UK, which actually is where the skinhead subset came out of.
Shit, I don't know. I don't know.
And I cannot remember. There's a specific style name for it, but that was what was really popular. It looks a little bit like a slimmed down, less insulated bomber jacket. But that's what it was. But no, heavy metal jackets. And I also ran into them when I used to work with at-risk youth, because a lot of kids who were coming out of the gangs in Chicago were wearing the old Chicago and New York gang style battle jackets, which had affiliation logos often painted on them, plus patches and that sort of thing. And, you know, as I grew up, the trend towards gutter punk, punk rock expanded, and I started to see punk rock vests show up a lot as well.
My first exposure to them was with punk rockers. I think the very first one that I ever like truly admired on someone in my social circles as a teenager had a, oh fuck, I can't remember. It was either Subhumans or Operation Ivy. And they kind of like dug heavy into like a cross between gutter punk and oi punk styles. And I remember thinking like, this is the coolest fucking thing. Like this guy, you know, taking the standard basic Levi's Wrangler jacket, I guess, or something.
Yep. Yep. Wrangler was the cheap version.
Yeah. The standard Levi's jacket, cut off the sleeves. And this fucker had gone and done like individual button punching of little metal spikes, not spikes, the
studs,
the spike like pyramid thing,
studs,
pyramid, yeah. Studs, okay. Just like whole just bands of them all up, yeah. And down, and he did it by hand. Like I remember seeing him doing it at a party. It's like, that's fucking cool. Wow. I don't have the attention span for that.
Yeah. I knew a bunch of people who did that to leather jackets and leather vests. They studded them up and patched them up, and like I cannot imagine putting the time to do a bunch of pyramid studs on a leather vest. It just is like, I would help a person with a row, and I'm like, this beer is not good enough to keep me going.
Yeah, that's what I more often saw in my, medium-sized college town that I grew up in. Again, it's sort of similar. It was small enough that it was just all the goths and punks and the coffee shop kids, you know. All hanging out together. There wasn't really much of a separation, but that's what I saw more of was leather jackets that were embellished with either, you know, painting with silver paint and the studs and the spikes and the, you know, all chains and all the accoutrement, you know.
I also saw a lot of people with leather jackets, but for some reason, and they had, you know, the patches and the spikes on them and more or less the same thing. But for some reason, I never got super into the leather aesthetic of it. Like, I loved that grungy punk rock denim, torn, frayed sleeves. I just loved that look.
So you're slightly younger than I am. I realized actually recently that I have been undercounting my age for at least a year, because I had to put it on an official form. So I had to do the math and realize that, oh, I am actually a year older than I have been claiming for the last 2 years.
Gets to a point where you forget.
Well, yeah. As someone who doesn't celebrate their birthday, and I have to do the math anytime anybody asks me. So, I think part of it is I remember leather vest and leather jacket style battle jackets as being a early to mid 80s thing. And then it fell off, because in like the early 90s was the rise of like Wilson's leather. If you remember that chain.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
And suddenly the price of a leather jacket got really expensive. You weren't finding them in secondhand thrift shops and all the places that, you know, the people of the punk aesthetic and metal aesthetic were able to shop, unless they were, you know, also driving a brand new Camry. I think that's when the shift back to denim goes. But if you like look at pictures from the 70s, like the 70s punk scene in New York, there's lots of denim jackets, and metal has always been leather and denim are both honored in the culture and all of that. And so you see lots of those things. So I think part of why is I remember the drop off where people weren't wearing the leather as much as they were wearing the denim.
Now, let's bring this back to a question that Poppy posed earlier. I could say that Poppy posed previously and make some alliteration there.
The Poppy posed previously on this podcast?
With the plosives, yes.
Perchance.
We hate our editor.
We hate him. We hate him so much. And that question was, why is it called a battle jacket?
Yeah.
Now, I don't myself know 100% factually why this is, but my theory has always been because of mosh pit culture.
Yeah. I did some digging on that, actually, in preparation for this episode, and I could not come up with a good answer either. I came up with two threads of thinking on where it came from. One was literally mosh pit culture and the whole, we'll talk more about this in a minute, but like the whole individual aesthetic and nature of a battle jacket and it being a palette for creativity definitely feeds out of the punk aesthetic and definitely is there. I did find some references, especially when I was looking back at the battle jackets of the 60s and 70s. And there's a possibility it came out of either Chicago or New York gang culture. But it's like iffy at best in that case as well. So, yeah.
See, I kind of had this like assumption that it came from the Vietnam War era. Of people who were drafted and then came back and were injured and were protesting, and they'd take their uniforms and cut them up and cover them in patches and like upside down, you know, American flags and stuff like that. And like that's I'm thinking like this, you know, Forrest Gump kind of scene of like the long haired, long bearded, Vietnam vets protesting at the Washington Mall or something. That's sort of my assumption, but this is based on no information whatsoever.
I have a feeling we're going to come back to that particular point when we delve into the later half of this episode, because I suspect that you're really close to at least some origin story of what is called the cut.
Aha, interesting.
And there's a lot of similarities there. And we'll get to that in a bit. Oh, we opening new beers?
We'll open beers, uh-oh. Ready?
3, 2, 1.
Oh, yeah. Oh, is that good for you?
Mm. Yeah, baby.
Oh, baby, thanks, yeah.
But my battle jacket is, I only generally wear it either when I'm podcasting, I've worn it a few times, or gaming, or if I'm going to the strip club. That's the only times I ever wear it. And I haven't gone to the strip club in a very long time, thanks to COVID. But
And cons.
Oh, and cons.
And yeah. Concerts, metal show.
Well, and that actually is a nice segue into another culture that has taken the concept of the battle jacket and taken it from that potentially violent mosh pit culture roots and turned it into just a way of being a big fucking nerd. And gamers and just super nerds love to make their own versions of battle jackets, very similar to the one I'm wearing with a video game patch on the back.
I was going to say, listeners, please take a look at our Facebook, Instagram feeds, et cetera, for the incredibly geek deep battle jackets that both of my co-hosts are rocking.
Tunnel Snakes rule.
We can do a little fashion show and show off our little, I mean, I just recently kind of, mine is almost actually done, which is new. I've been working on it for like a few years, I think.
As I do with everything in my life, I lost interest in adding more patches and my attention span went somewhere else. So one day it will come back. I did sew a couple of patches on to my vest and to my dice bag now while we were at Cannon Beach over the Christmas holiday and our little solo getaway vacation.
Yeah, that's kind of like been, I think, one of the, it's like a blessing and a curse. Nowadays, someone who's putting together a modern battle jacket has literally all of the internet and Etsy and all of these small mom and pop patch shops selling on the internet and can go and look for real cool patches and find the things they want. I do miss kind of like being able to walk into the many, many military surplus stores that used to be around and Ragstock and places like that. And flipping through the patch bin of all of the punk bands and weird stuff that they got in and pulled off of other clothing.
Or going to the Army Navy store where they would have all the patches of pretty much any group, any squadron, any fire team from any war. They would always have this big old bin full of patches of various well-known teams and units, and if you dig through it long enough, you could probably find one of the, you know, the screaming gnomes from 76.
Somebody the other day on one of the Buy Nothing groups that I follow on Facebook was had some old vintage or, you know, historical patches or whatever, and I'm relatively certain that one of them was from like a full bird colonel.
Totally possible.
And it had like the four chevrons and then like the other chevron underneath it.
Well, that wouldn't be a colonel. Four chevrons with a chevron underneath it. Depends on color. So that could be
gold.
Gold. Gold on blue or gold on green?
I think it's gold on green.
That's Army and that's
General?
I can't remember.
I can't remember. But there was part of me that was like, oh my God, I want that.
Yep.
But then I was like, I didn't earn that. You know, it was weird to kind of have this moment of like, it'd be so cool to have that on there. But then also like, is that like offensive to?
Yep. I have patches that I inherited from my dad, but I'm not. He was a Marine and I am nowhere near Marine quality. And I just don't, you know.
Yep.
See, but I would say since they are your dad's, that would be okay. Because that's a story. I mean, your dad was a veteran.
Mm-hmm. That's
true.
And
he did probably get exposed to Agent Orange.
100%.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. I mean, that's like...
There's a world of difference. And while I am very sensitive to some of the feelings of my veteran friends on this, there's a world of difference between walking around trying to pull a stolen valor card and throwing something on because it's either cool or even more importantly, personally meaningful. Now, coming from a family with a lot of veterans in it who had the tendency to just get rid of their shit by and large because it's like, well, things happened. We got called. We showed up like we, that's how we roll. And then when we're done, all of that stuff goes. It's, you know, there are a couple exceptions to that, but you know, it's kind of like, other than my uncle, I think my uncle probably would have kept his, but his BDU top got confiscated by the police in California. So
when in doubt, take him to Michael's and have him framed.
Yep.
Bringing it shortly back to the nerd battle vest.
Oh, yes.
I don't know where that started. Now, I do know that there is a significant overlap between metal and punk rock and whatnot communities with nerds. Like, many fucking metalheads are into Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, hell yes.
And a whole lot of punk rockers really like to play some Fallout and stuff. So, like, there is a serious overlap. I remember my gaming group in high school in my early 20s was mostly metalheads, punk rockers, and BDSM fetish models. And I was like, it was so dark. It was just a nice dark culture that you just wouldn't like look at and think, these are cool people and they're playing Dungeons and Dragons.
I don't know either. I mean, I do remember growing up, like in the 80s, a couple games out there were really pro creating patches that tied into their lore. FASA products in specific, both their Renegade Legion and Battletech lines put out lots and lots of patches for the various factions and such. And so there was some of that going on, but it wasn't really popular. And then when White Wolf became a thing. We started to see the whole tendency of rocking your t-shirt and your whatever your Camarilla faction pin was and that sort of thing. So it's like it's always been kind of in the background. And then I don't know whether it was because the cheaper embroidery tools came on the market or whatever, but suddenly it just exploded.
Yeah. And now I've got patches. I've got Star Wars patches. I've got video game patches. I've got music. I've got band patches. Yeah, it's just a nice mix of everything. And I love it. I like wearing it. It makes me feel awesome. I feel like I am wearing myself on my sleeve.
Yeah.
Or lack thereof.
Yeah.
In the early mid 90s was the last time I had a battle jacket. And in my case, it was a little bit off the beaten path. Mine was a East German engineer's jacket that had the sleeves chopped off and a whole bunch of really random patches on it that, you know, it was one of those things where like everybody's like, OK, it's his creativity palette, which is what a battle jacket is at the end of the day. But every so often somebody would be like, where did you get this patch? And I'm like, well, there's a story behind it.
It's sort of like your coffee table book of your clothing coffee table book of like,
yes,
that's, you know, everything's probably got a story.
Of your various battle jackets, of our battle jackets at the table, let's go around and Poppy, starting with you. Uh-oh. What is your favorite patch on that jacket?
Oh, gosh. Okay.
And it can't be one that the jacket came with.
Yeah. Let me take it off and look at it really fast. Okay, hold on.
And Jacob, think about your favorite patch on yours.
Mm-hmm. All right, hold on. You can probably hear it.
Oh, yeah. Like, all the buttons.
And yep. Everything.
I have a guess on what it might be.
I mean, kid. So, I like them all.
Of course you do. They're in your battle jacket.
I really like my Type O negative patch.
There you go.
It's one of my favorite bands, and it's a very distinctive logo, and I really like my Type O negative patch.
Nice. I thought you were going to say the bottles patch.
I mean, I like the bottle patch. I like all the patches you got me. I really like my swear wolves.
Fuck.
Swear wolves for life. It's a great inside joke, deep cut. I really like my Parliament of Owls. I like my Vagabond Opera patch. I like my owl patch that I got in Japan. I like my Steven Universe Lion patch. I like my Gygax patch. I like my Mono Bushido vs. Founder patch.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably like one of the raddest ones, I would say, is my first Founder patch. I've got a pumpkin patch.
As in like the doll?
No, like as in the pumpkin patch.
Oh.
Patch. It's a pumpkin patch. Patch, you see. Anyway. But yeah, I really like my Type O negative patch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Your pumpkin patch is gorgeous.
Is it gorgeous?
Yeah.
I see you see what I did there.
I did. So I'm actually going to start a theme with the pumpkin patches, and I'm going to have as many different pumpkin patches as I can. So I'm going to have a pumpkin patch. So like
a patch of pumpkin patches.
Yes. I'll probably try to get one of my cat who's named Pumpkin and make a patch of pumpkin.
Oh, God.
It'll be a thing. Meow. It'll be an ongoing thing that the ongoing joke, because I love Halloween. So as many pumpkin patch references as I can have would be great.
Nice.
So same question for you, NPC. What is your favorite patch?
It's 100% the Tunnel Snake patch. Yeah. Like it's huge. It took so much time and effort and pricked fingers to pop that patch on there, mm-hmm, and sew it in. And I had a lot of fun sewing it. I learned most of what I know about patch sewing by trying new things while sewing that patch.
Yeah.
There are like 12 different styles of stitches on it. I didn't invent anything, but in my brain, it was like, oh, I'm going to try this new thing that only I just came up with. That patch was so fun to put on there. I would say that if If that wasn't the one that I was going to go with, it would be my pair of Ruby and Yang patches.
Yeah.
From the RWBY, the Ruby animated series. I fucking love that show so much. And the Ruby Rose I have right on top. When I wear the battle jacket, the rose is positioned right upon one of my own tattoos, which is also a rose on my shoulder. And the other one is the yellow fire heart symbol of Yang, because I am Team Yang, you know. I'm Team Yang. And if you're also Team Yang, please write and let us know, because Yang is the best, like, fundamentally.
An NPC is feeling very lonely in that fact.
I mean, they're all cute.
She wears aviator shades, all right? She's the best.
And she does have them titties.
She's got them titties.
She's got them titties, you know.
Oh, my God. Okay, Jacob.
I know what my mind likes. It's all good. It's okay. It's all right.
So on my battle jacket, may it rest in peace, there were two patches on there that I liked a lot, and deciding between your children.
Yeah. Everyone really has their favorite child, though. No one will admit to it, but everyone has their favorite child.
But of that, the two I had that I liked, that I valued the most, one was the symbol of the Irish pikeman uprising. And I had gotten that from a small group of folks in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the Irish community there. And it was a really nice design. I really liked it. It was very important to me. First big push for independence after English colonialization happened. So, yeah, it was a big deal. The other one was a FASA Renegade Legion patch, which is the old red R in the vaguely anarchist font style. In the battle against evil, this one counts, you know, that the whole thing, you know, it's those were the two. And if I could have saved any patches off that jacket, it would have been those two, and everything else could have gone, and I would have been fine with it.
Do you think you'll ever be inspired to create a new battle jacket?
Possibly. You know, part of it is, I mean, it's a combination of factors. One, I personally believe that battle jackets should never be outsourced for sewing. You either should do it yourself, or someone who you value should do it.
Yeah.
And from a sewing perspective, my hands have gone to shit.
Mm.
So I'd be reduced to hand sewing, and machine sewing a battle jacket is actually a pain in the ass in a lot of ways. There are talented sewers out there who can do it. I am not one of them. So, yes.
That patch?
No, not that one. The red R rather than the TOG symbol. What do you take me for? A fascist?
That. But red.
But the red.
Okay, yeah, God. Yeah, I'll post the pictures, folks. I've just been Googling the patch.
Red on black.
Yeah.
And however, a Kickstarter I funded got me a couple patches, and I'm in conversation with a small group of my friends that we might be putting together vests with our respective patches from the Kickstarter. So when we're doing con events in support of the Kickstarter, we'll be rocking our affiliations and stuff. And I'm actually currently trying to source two patches from West Germany, which is being a pain because it's the only place you can get two of the patches I need to finish my vest. So yeah.
Do you have a Moto Bushido patch?
I do have a Moto Bushido
patch. Okay, just checking. So we could probably hook you up if you don't.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
You know, I think the topic of Motorcycle Samurai is a good segue into the next half of, well, however time's going to go. We don't care. We're drinking. The next half of our conversation, which is on cuts.
Okay, so story time, really quick. One of my big things with before I wear this battle jacket was, how do I not get my ass kicked? right? So leading up to that, obviously, now that I know more about it, like no one's going to give a shit. However, we were in the Dalles once for Wagon Con, and we went to a bar, and Nathaniel was wearing his battle jacket. And later, Jacob mentioned, like, that biker guy gave you the side eye and checked you out.
Until he realized that you were just a nerd.
Until he realized you're just a nerd.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, shit. Like, the last thing I want to do is, like, piss off some bikers. Like, obviously, I'm not going to, I think. But, like, so that was sort of my question is, like, what's the difference in...
Yeah.
Let's start with what is a cut?
Well, so there's cuts and there's biker vests, and they are two similar but unrelated things.
A biker vest is basically just a battle jacket for Harley Davidson midlife crisis people, right?
Yeah, generally.
Yeah.
Yep. Although there are ones that are worn by the general biker population. You'll see a lot of folks rocking the Lone Wolf or, Free Rider or whatever. Just a vest that is the exact same aesthetic as a battle jacket. It's a palette for creativity. It's patches you like. It's a way of saying something about yourself. And that's where it's at. A cut is either a denim or leather vest or certain other pieces of clothing that is worn by particular biker organizations. They can be motorcycle clubs. They can be riding clubs. They can be touring clubs. And there are some generally understood rules about them. So, like, I am a member of the local Portland Star Motorcycle and Touring chapter. And so I have a leather vest that I'm waiting for two patches to come in for when I'm riding with them that has my Star Touring patch, my Star Touring patch, my chapter patch, the motorcycles I've owned, and all of that. So, like, another Star Touring person can walk up, read my vest, and know what chapter I'm in, where I'm from. Am I currently an officer in my chapter, and what Yamaha motorcycles I've owned. That is what it is. And at the end of the day, that's what a cut is. You look at it and you know who that person is, who that represents, and potentially where they're from.
So it's a form of heraldry.
Exactly. So cuts come out of two places simultaneously. There's the, and one of them is basically for this point extinct, except we're in Portland, so it needs to be mentioned. Motorcycle clubs, pre-World War II, often wore similar garments, and those technically fall under the classification of cuts. Now that's not really a thing anymore. You don't see them that often, except we live in Portland, Oregon, and the Flying 13 is based out of here. You get in with the Flying 13, you get a Flying 13 sweater. It is a heavy duty sweater. It is designed to go over motorcycle wear, but they have been rocking this for so, like, they are originally they were at one point affiliated with the AMA, American Motorcycle Association. So they're like back in the 30s and 40s, for Christ's sakes. And at that point, it was rocking the sweater, and that was kind of how you did it. It was a heavy sweater to keep you warm, et cetera, et cetera.
Are we talking about, like, those heavy duty sweaters with, like, the leather, like, elbow patches that you would see, like, ye old timey football players wear?
Exactly.
I know exactly what you're talking
about. They're the kind of sweaters that you can picture someone raising their arms and challenging you to a game of fisticuffs.
Exactly. And
with their handlebar mustache twisted up.
And to this day, you prospect in and become a member of the Flying 13, you get a Flying 13 sweater.
I've never spied one of those. I'm looking forward to seeing one.
Yeah. You should go for the season opener they do, and they'll be all over the place. But where biker vests and particular cuts came out of was, much like biker culture in the United States nowadays, it came out of returning veterans from World War II in Korea. And surprisingly enough, there's a connection for dealing with the experiences of combat and motorcycles. To this day, there's a reason why the VA hospital up here has more designated parking than any other facility in the city.
To add a lighter point to that, again, reconnecting it back to the nerd stuff, I've wrote a role-playing game about motorcycle samurai, and my whole theme was connecting the concept of the dispossessed samurai class that was told that they no longer needed to exist with the themes of American soldiers coming back from a war and the country being like, just go away. And, you know, I made motorcycle clubs plus samurai, and it just made sense.
Makes tons of sense. But when it comes to a true cut, will have the symbol of the club almost always on the center of the back. And it can be a single patch. It could be a double patch or a triple patch. Double patches are not that common anymore. And it will have other club mandated badging on the front of it. It is more common for triple patches on the back, which will have the name of the club, the logo of the club, and then the location or the word Nomad on the bottom of the rocker.
And listener, you can't see it, but Jacob is actually doing a visual layout with his hands here. I believe you are showing the name being on top,
which is the upper rocker.
In like an arch kind of arch pattern.
The logo being right in the middle of the big old fucking thing right there. Yep. And then the location or affiliation at the bottom.
Yep.
And also in an arch, but in a downward.
Yep. If you've ever watched Sons of Anarchy and you've looked at one of their things, you get the idea of the general layout.
And every club has rules about where patch placement can happen and who can actually wear a patch. And some point in the future, we'll get into riding clubs, riding organizations, et cetera, and the rules around that. Some organizations, you don't earn your central back patch until you've finished prospecting with them, and that's when you earn your back patch. But others have specific things. Like the Full Tilt Riders here in Portland. Portland has the mother chapter for Full Tilt Riders. They have a single patch. They are borderline outlaw. They are not 1%, but you know, they have a single patch. There's a whole bunch of other clubs out here that have single patches, and there's several that have the three piece.
Now, when you say borderline outlaw, do you mean that outlaw as a general adjective, or do you mean outlaw as in the outlaws?
No, I mean as the general adjective.
Gotcha.
And when you say 1%, you do not mean they are multi-billionaires.
No. In motorcycle culture, it dates back to a AMA propaganda journalist article piece where 99% of motorcyclists are law-abiding citizens, and it is the 1% that gives the rest of motorcyclists a bad name. So it became the 1%. And you will see some bikers rocking 1% patches.
Usually in a diamond shape.
Usually in a diamond.
Yeah.
And so that's that. And there's, like I said, there's rules. Like the top rocker above on the back piece will have your club, the logo, and the bottom will have wherever you're based out of. Now, the rules on what you can put on your vest is set by your club. And the rules on what the club can put on their vest is highly political. Here in Portland and a lot of the other United States, there's organizations in various localities called the Council of Clubs, where you want to start up a biker organization of some sort, you better check in with the Council of Clubs and make sure you're not stepping on anybody's colors, their logo, and make sure it's okay to be putting where you're based out of.
Now, okay, bringing back something that you said earlier, to live in a time before the internet, one had to learn certain things. One had to find patches for their battle jacket. One had to figure these things out on their own. In a time before the internet, how would one have known such things about who to ask? Let's say they're like, you know, me and my buddies really like motorcycles, so we want to put our names on our jackets. How would they have known not to get their ass beat?
You get to have Jacob in 1996 break up a bar fight in a VFW hall because some idiots walked in rocking Duluth, Minnesota on their biker jackets and getting stomped hard by Northwoods riders. You have to be in the culture and you rapidly learn. I mean, if you hang around bikers, like these were things. Now, yes, I grew up in a family that had bikers in it and bikers adjacent to it. So I grew up with it kind of like in the soup, as it were. But you hang around bikers long enough, you start to learn. Like here in the Pacific Northwest, you'll see people rocking Misfits patches and that sort of thing on their biker gear. They're a biker club out of Seattle.
I thought you were talking about the Glenn Danzig band.
No.
Yeah, same. I'm like, yeah, that's a very iconic patch. Yeah.
I've seen many people with Misfits patches.
Yeah. Yep. But
so confusing.
But it's not uncommon to see clubs that have like the name of their club and the logo and then no bottom rocker. Because it's the bottom rocker that gets you in trouble with your location.
Why?
Because you're claiming territory.
Oh, interesting. You're not just like, this is where I'm from.
Nope.
So it is the biker version of I've peed on all of those trees.
Exactly. And that is, and the cut serves a couple different things. One, it's heraldry.
Yeah.
Two, it's a reminder. And like you'll actually hear bikers talking about that, especially bikers who were in clubs and then retired or got out. They'll talk about carrying the weight. Biker vests tend to be leather. They tend to be heavy, although denim is also used. Like one of the big four 1%er gangs in the country, the Pagans, are traditionally to this day still wear denim as their primary vest style. But you walk up and you take a look at it and your vest, you look at that vest, you'll know who that person's aligned with, where they're from, whether they're a big wheel in their particular chapter, because they'll say something like president, sergeant at arms, enforcer, et cetera, et cetera. But because these vests are heavy, it's a constant reminder of your responsibility to the rest of the club. And there are, when you look at a cut, you'll frequently see a lot of what we call personalized patches, which are things like, if you could read this, the blank fell off, or which is like one that every asshole in the 90s wore.
Yeah.
Or other things. So you can still personalize these, but you don't touch the main thing. And more importantly, most clubs tend to view the vest as chapter property. When I am riding with Star Touring, one of the rules is the vest doesn't drink. There are only three occasions where you can be seen in a Star Touring vest with an alcoholic beverage in your hand, and that's specific Star get-togethers where the bikes are over there, nobody's riding, the hotels are over here, it's a big get-together, and everybody's walking around their vests. So you can, like, walk up to each other and read and know at a moment where the person's from, who they are, et cetera, et cetera. But outside of that, the vest never drinks. Some clubs have rules like you never wear your vest in a car or truck. You only wear it when you're walking around or on your motorcycle. Other clubs have rules like the vest never touches the ground. There's a whole lot of things. And so there's rules around it. It becomes a uniform. It's a uniform that you still usually have a lot of ability to customize and, make your own, but there's some rules about it. It can get heated. Like there was a full-on war that involved like firebombs and shit over somebody having Chicago on their patch back in the 80s. And it can get heated because, you know, you're claiming territories and stuff.
Fascinating.
Bringing this back to Poppy's question, how do you not get your ass beat if you want to wear your battle jacket in an area where you think there might be some bikers?
Biggest simple one, don't wear a location on the back of your jacket. You know, like, it's very simple. Look up Sons of Anarchy. Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't wear a three-piece. Generally avoid putting any locations on other than, like, people usually won't give you shit if you've had I've been to Moab State Park or National Park or something on there. They don't care about that. In that case, Poppy, you're rocking St. Louis Cardinals in the traditional baseball font. Walking around, because you have something large in the middle of your jacket, you'll get some people who will just quick do a head check to see what you're wearing, much like happened to NPC when we were in the Dalles.
With his big
snake patch. Where it's like, it's reminiscent of a biker patch, and it's like, what do we got here?
That's what we got.
I do claim St. Louis as mine.
I will not intervene with you, it can get to be a thing. And if you do it properly and play well with others and go before the council of clubs, you can sometimes get latitude and sometimes you won't.
And one that should go without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway. Don't seek out patches of known MCs.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And wear it as fashion. Just don't do that.
Just don't do that.
Don't do that, guys. Please.
Please don't.
Please don't. It's not a joke.
Yep. I know Sons of Anarchy was a cool show. Just don't do that.
Don't do that. Yeah. Don't be that guy.
And in all actuality, you probably won't catch very serious trouble for showing up in Sons of Anarchy specifically gear, but you will be treated like the douche you are. Yeah. You know, I don't care how damn down with Sam Crow you are, but you know, it's like you just look like an idiot and you will be treated as such. Don't steal other clubs' colors. Don't steal other clubs' font. Don't put the location you're out of on the back of your jacket. I do know a couple people who roll around with Nomad on the back of their jacket that don't have any club name or club logo, but have personalized patches on it. You can generally get away with Nomad. There's a weird sort of respect for anybody who rocks Nomad, no matter what club they're in, because they tend to be like full-time on the roaders, traveling the country. So you can usually get away with that, but don't count on it. You walk in with something that looks like a biker patch, bikers, including this biker, is going to check you out because I want to know what came through the door and is it a friend or a potential problem? So, you know, and that's what it is. Even when I come in 13 deep with the rest of the Star Chapter to a roadhouse to grab lunch when we're out on a ride, if another club's there, there'll be a checking out and they're like, oh, okay, you're the weirdo civilians. We don't need to worry about you. we'll just talk about bikes and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, it gets different.
It's flagging, right? It's heraldry. It's flagging. It's you don't want to fuck up.
Right. The other big thing is never, ever, ever, and this is across the board, whether it's a one percenter Hell's Angel or me, ever touch my vest without my permission.
Don't touch my fucking battle jacket without my permission.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's across the board.
Please don't touch me without my permission.
But you will buy yourself a world of hurt in the literal sense by doing that potentially. And so that's I don't care how cool it is. Just don't do it. I've seen some ugly stuff happen over that.
And don't touch anybody's bike. Don't touch anybody's gear. Mess with anything that could potentially be seen as a favorite possession or icon of another person,
right,
regardless of their creed and their origin and their pastimes and their activities.
Yep. The difference being, though, if you touch my gear, you touch my bike, you've touched something of mine. Mm-hmm. You touch my cut, you have touched something of me and my fellows. And it's not just a potential disrespect to me. And that's the big difference.
Hmm.
So,
yeah. Quick aside. So, or segue. Leather vests, leather biker vests are very popular across multiple communities. Yes.
Yes, very much so.
So, can we quick, and I don't even know if we have much to add to this given the lack of planning here, but the difference between it's a biker vest and it's someone in the leather community.
Yes.
Right? My experience is that leather community, it's going to be like pristine. Mm-hmm. Like there's not going to be anything on it.
Yeah. They want that fine, sweet, unmarked leather. And if it is marked, it's marked in specific ways or specific patterns, mm-hmm. but it doesn't have gaudy, mismatched, misplaced
mm-hmm. yeah.
positioned patches.
You don't want to get caught on anything while you're doing whatever yep. activities you're yep. doing, right?
Yeah. And the other big thing is generally bikers' vests tend to be a little bit heavier duty. Anybody who walks in with a pristine jacket better be introducing to themselves to me by their, with a leather biker vest better be introducing to themselves with a handshake and their name, because obviously you just got out of prospecting. You know, it's, you haven't put miles on that, son. but yeah, no. And another thing to keep in mind is not all clubs do it. There are some great clubs that don't wear cuts, they tend to be some of the most laid back clubs. So, you know, just be respectful out there, folks.
Well, I learned something today.
I did, too. I feel that I had a lot to say, but I also had a lot to learn.
Yeah. I feel like I will be comfortable wearing my vest and my battle jacket, whatever you want to call it. And, won't look like too much of a poser.
Yeah, I researched this heavily when writing my game. And I appreciate Jacob actually putting everything out into words. I researched the fuck out of this before I made my game because I wanted to make sure that none of the content of it was offensive to anybody in either of the cultures that I was, let's face it, appropriating for fiction. I wanted to make sure that I wasn't doing so in a way to fetishize them or mm-hmm. to make them into something untrue. So yeah. As such, I will never have rockers on my vests mm-hmm. because I don't have an affiliation and I don't claim a territory. Mm-hmm. And I feel as long as I'm doing that, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put some Star Wars shit on there and people are going to be like, okay,
he's
a fucking nerd.
Yeah. Yep.
Rockers. So those are the arching mm-hmm.
yep.
patches.
Top rocker, bottom rocker.
Okay.
This is the last call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol, get going. Drink up, then order again.
So bringing this to a close, more or less, I want to bring up a topic that Poppy had mentioned earlier in the week that I think is a fantastic idea that I know that she only said as a joke, but I'm thinking we should turn this into a thing.
Uh-oh.
And that is, we need to get a big old round wheel, like a wheel of fortune or a spin the wheel kind of thing. And we'll, each wedge of this wheel, we're going to pick a topic of something we have no idea that Jacob knows a shitload about.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll spin that, and that will be our next episode. Because, Jacob, you are someone who just randomly has a shitload to say about things.
Do I get my 48 hours notice on this, or are we doing this live? You, like, I... Like
48 hours notice, I think, would be respectful.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Or a week or 2 weeks.
Because like, I spend my entire life having to do research at the last minute on really in-depth topics. So like when we decided we were talking about battle jackets, it occurred to me like, where did this term actually come from? And so suddenly I am making two calls to the Multnomah County Reference Library and doing a shit ton of Google and Wikipedia, just trying to track down that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's part of it, you know.
I feel like with anything I could ever need help with, I could ask Jacob, and he's probably not going to say, I don't know. Like, Jacob is the strange, jack of all trades, master of none, perhaps, right? Jacob has a little bit of knowledge about damn near everything, and it's fascinating. So we just were like, pull out of a hat or spin a wheel of like, Jacob, what kind of random shit do you know today?
So two rules on this. One, okay. I do request at least 24 hours notice. I'd prefer 48, but give me 24 at the minimum. Two, I don't want to see the wheel in the van in advance, because if we are going, like, I will game the fucking wheel if I get to see the wheel. Also, I would love to get like listeners throwing in on this, because like they may throw some stuff in there that I'm like, I have no clue. Like, especially when like it comes to computer stuff, like I'll be looking across the table like, so NPC, doc on this. No,
but it's fascinating. Some of the conversations that we've had both on and off of the mics, where suddenly you're just like, oh yeah, but wait, like, the fuck? How did you know that? How did you actually know the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow? Like, you know, or something like that.
African or European? Come on.
It doesn't matter. You know both.
Yeah.
I don't anymore, though. Oh, at one point, I actually went through and looked those two up just so I would have the answers.
Jacob's one of those friends of mine. We've been friends for how many years now?
Four or five at this point.
Yeah, I think so. And there's definitely been points in time when I'm like, he's bullshitting. There's no way he knows. There is no way he knows that. He's fucking with me.
There have been people in my life that I have thought that about. Oh, will always have something to say about certain things. But, and you know, for all I know, Jacob, you could be bullshitting your way through some of them, but you get so many of them right on the ones that I do know about. And so I'm just like, okay, he knows what he's talking about.
Jacob just had a colorful life and has had experience with a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Like,
I mean, there was a period where NPC, I know, thought I was a total bullshitter for a long time. And I don't blame him, because it's hard. But, you know, if you are a person who's a professional know-it-all, the first important rule is when you get something wrong, own it.
Yeah, totally.
Don't make excuses. Just fucking own it. Yeah. Because, you know, brains are only so large, and we all get older and things stagnate.
Well, and how else would you learn new things?
Exactly.
And even then, though, like the only times I feel that I've like aha'd you on something was like, oh, that actually happened in 1492, not 1493.
I mean, with citations,
Not that we're trying to test you or anything. Yeah. You're this really interesting well of knowledge, and it's fascinating how many.
Yeah.
It's cool. I mean, that can be said about any of us.
Yeah.
Xander, NPC, yourself. I mean, it's just weird and wild. I mean, yes, mine tends to be a little eclectic and all over the place. But, you know, it all depends.
It would be interesting to have like Patreon only episodes, perhaps, about like each of us gets a chance to sort of like wax verbose about whatever weird topic we want to geek out about, though. I don't know if I could talk about mine without like seriously outing what I do for my day job.
Yeah. You'd be hard.
It'd be really hard.
That is kind of a good way to bring this to a last thing that I wanted to talk about. As this episode comes out, it will be either before or very shortly after the release of the third and final episode of our Mothership saga, recorded almost exactly a year ago. And it just took me forever to edit it. I just, you know, life happened. But
burn it all down.
But
Dear listeners, I'm going to interrupt him, and there's nothing he can do about it. The first episode was such a piece of hell to edit for this poor man that I understand that every time you open the file, he just noped right out.
No, honestly, not going to lie, that's exactly what happened. Yeah. Every time I opened the file, it's like, no, I have better things to do right now. Like, shoot heroin or something, which I don't do. But it was like, I'm deathly afraid of needles, so that would never happen. The joke, anyway, that was a bad joke.
That's the joke.
That's the joke. But I finally, at the end of 2020, decided I'm going to murder the backlog. I went through every item in the backlog and murdered it, and I made it happen. It's awesome. I had so much fun running that Mothership game, and it was so fantastic. And by the third episode, I was just dying with laughter editing that. And I went back and listened to the whole thing, and I still was dying laughing. I had so much fun editing second half of all of those recordings. But that third episode, which is coming out either soon or might already be out, dear listener, I implore you to listen to the whole Mothership thing, but especially the third episode. And the reason is I got really creative with sound effects and background noise on the third episode. I had so much fun doing that. And to tie it to something Poppy said, which brought this topic up, if you are on our Patreon, there are extended cuts of it in addition to all of the extra how your characters could have died outtakes that we recorded at the end of every session. So I put all of that up on the Patreon. They're really fucking good. I lament not killing every single character every single time, because bringing those deaths out. Anyway, yeah.
This was the one that I was in, right? Where I burned the whole bar.
You
down.
Were in it for the first two of the three. And then in this, well, I'm not. Spoilers. Nope.
Okay.
Y'all gotta go listen.
Yeah, just
gotta
making listen. Sure that was the same one with me and Abraham Lincoln. And
yes, you can listen to Abraham Lincoln, one of our special guests, and Eleanor, who owned that fucking show.
Oh my god.
Oh yeah.
As the android.
Yep.
She was so good. Oh, and I really want to get the group back together at some point.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the ones where we have to get the band back together. Mm-hmm. But like, if you need something, I know we've talked about the first episode being a little rough from the editorializing end of things.
Yeah.
Editing. Oh, fuck editing. Me. Thank you.
Okay.
This beer has hit me harder than I expected. The first episode, especially the one with all of the outtakes, listening to Poppy and Xander as two methed out chipmunk bounty hunters, like in personality, they're not actually chipmunks, is would have been hell to edit, but I am looking forward to hearing this one bad. God.
Xander and I make a hell of a team.
You were a fantastic team, especially one of you would say something really awful and the other one would back it up. And then the first one would go, I love you, honey. And they go, I love you. And it was so perfect.
I haven't listened to any of it
yet. You really should. I put everything on Patreon at the end of December. I did a whole week long editing binge where I basically did nothing but edit for a week. And when it was done, I had cleared up the entire backlog. I put it all on Patreon in one fell swoop, and I set the rest of it to slowly release on the public feed. There's a lot of bonus material out there. I highly recommend checking it out, dear listener. But even if you don't, the main episodes are on our main feed. That Mothership session, just going back and thinking back to when we were in this era where we could all play in person together. Yeah. Don't you miss that?
I do. I want my Tales from the Loop kids back so bad.
I'd take Mothership instead.
Really?
Mm-hmm. No, I loved them both, but Mothership is fresher in my mind, and it ended on such an interesting point, and I really want to know if Jolly the Roger ever puts pants on. And on that note, let's go ahead and close out. Thank you for listening to us here at Bikers Dice and Bars in Portland, Oregon. Please join us online on our Discord server. Check us out on Twitter. We have an Instagram, but I haven't updated that thing in months. I hate Instagram. So if somebody else wants to volunteer to be our social media manager, please let me know. But find us online in all the places. Come and say hello. Chat with us. Yep. Join the community.
We're on Facebook, folks. Come on. Come on. Yeah.
And anyway, as usual, I'm NPC.
I'm just Jacob.
I am Poppy Beaujolais.
And we wish to remind you,
always keep a shiny side up.
Always tip your bartender.
May your dice always roll 20s. And please, always drink responsibly. Happy New Year. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for joining us, friends. You've reached the end of Bikers Dice and Bars. Talking bicycles and bikes, buying a scene.